So I think I've sent you, the amp strength for the paper Bob and I are going to do in Cleveland for the National Lyric Conference, which is Labor Employment Relations Association, this June. The second page of that abstract outlines that besides trying to say something about MSU in terms of a non-union dispute resolution procedure for faculty, we were curious to try to figure out what other Big Ten institutions do. So hopefully you got a copy of that, though it's funny, it's a Word version of a Qualtrics survey. So I think I sent you that. And I don't know if I sent you any of these potential questions or not. If I didn't, I apologize. So, I was just going to go through these, but I can go in whatever order you want. We don't have to follow this order. This was Bob's proposed order.
So, in your first question, I have no problem going in order.
Sure. No, it's fine with me if we go in order.
Okay.
If you don't want to, I don't care.
No, that's fine. And I'll always...
Because I really... My key questions, quite honestly, is about your time and your understanding of sort of the previous immediate time.
Sure.
Which would be Donahue and Bell. Because asking you about myself or Tehan or Rubner or going back to 1972 seems a little foolish.
I remember Rubner.
Okay, so you can tell me something about that. I didn't realize that.
So in terms of total service,
yeah.
Are you asking what is my current load?
Well, so when did you start working for MSU? What unit were you hired in? What kind of, without numerous, little bit details.
Sure.
What you teach, what research, and what's the, maybe academic governance, what's the connection to you having this job now?
So I started in 1988 as an instructor in counseling, educational psychology, and special education.
That was in that?
In College of Education.
Okay.
In 1990, I began a postdoc with Richard Lerner at the Institute for the Children, Youth, and Families. That was that university consortium that touched, I think, seven colleges and the Provost for Outreach. Mm-hmm. And then in 92, I began a tenure stream position in family and child ecology, which was in human ecology, which then morphed into College of Social Sciences and Human Development and Family Studies.
Mm-hmm.
2002 to 2003, I was the acting director of the Samora Institute.
Right.
And then I've also spent time at University Outreach and Engagement. That was, I think, 2001 to 2003. So it must have been 2003 and 4. I was at JSRI. In terms of,
so you did extension for a while. Is that what you just said?
No.
What'd you
say? The Samora Institute.
No, I heard that one.
Outreach and Engagement.
Oh, okay.
Fitzgerald Shop.
Before High. Somebody else.
With High.
Okay. I knew High well, so.
Yeah, I still know High well. In terms of university committees, university governance, I can just name the committees. It's been
That's fine.
UCFA, Athletic Council, University Graduate, University Tenure, University Naming Committee.
Wow.
Faculty Senate.
Okay.
So I've kind of done a little bit of a tour.
What year did you do UCFA? I only ask because I did UCFA as FGO attending it.
So that was
for my 8 years. You know, it was like monthly and whatever.
Yeah, that was Rubner, so that would have been 94, 95, I believe.
Okay. During time when Mike was?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how I met Michael.
And I also heard you just say Athletic Council.
Mm-hmm.
I was Athletic Council faculty rep 2 years before I became FGO. So what years were you in there? Don't worry about it.
That was before Beekman.
So more recent.
No, Beekman's not Athletic Council. No, it was It was that former gymnastics coach from Wisconsin in the College of Business. He was the chair.
Oh, yeah, no, across the street here.
Yes.
Well, he did it forever.
Yes.
He was running along with Chuck Williams during my time.
Right.
And I'll think of the name just in a minute. But
I can see him, but I can't remember his
name.
Me
too. But yeah, he was College of Business, and he and
He was a gymnastics coach at MSU for a while.
Okay, I didn't even know that part of his
yeah.
career. Anyways, I'll think of it in a second. But anyways, he did it so long. But you did that for a couple of years too.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So anyways, I did too.
And then I also served as a counsel, which is how I got introduced to the FGO office. Three different cases. One went to hearing. One was an informal mediation.
Mm-hmm.
And one I worked with the faculty member to help them understand that what they were trying
mm-hmm.
to achieve was inconsistent with. I didn't think there was a good chance that they could get anything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just put it.
What they wanted was unrealistic.
Yes.
I would say. Okay.
Yes.
So you did that three cases?
Yes.
All during Rubner's time?
No, this was all during Donahue's time.
Hmm?
All during Donahue's time.
Oh, okay, more recent.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
And the other administrative role that I've played for the last 5 years is the Associate Chair of HDFS.
Who?
The Associate Chair of Human Development and Family Studies.
Oh, okay. So that was pretty recent. 2015, 18, 20.
I'm still on.
Oh.
I'm still technically on the clock.
Gotcha. 2019.
Still going.
Gotcha. Well, it's 2019, right?
Yes. Yes.
So I didn't know that. Who was that before you?
Barbara Ames was the associate chair.
Okay.
She and Karen Wampler was the chair, and then Amy Bonomi came in.
Gotcha.
So
okay. Thanks. So, do you already answer what led you to be interested in this FGO position, which at the time, as I understood it, when you took it, it was called Responsible Administrator.
Yes.
Which
so,
is quite a title.
I got a phone call from Terry just before his mother passed, let's say August 24th or whatever, and he asked if I would meet with him to talk about this. I guess whatever, with Bill's resignation and John's temporary appointment in the summer,
mm-hmm.
they were in a conundrum, and basically I was asked, could I step in and be a face person for the short term?
Mm-hmm.
It was based in part on a recommendation, I understand, from Bill, based on the work that I had done with the three faculty.
Oh, okay.
One of them was a really challenging situation.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, the one that was mediated, involved an employment attorney, and the other one was just a faculty member who,
mm-hmm.
That's not appropriate to say, just a fact. The other was a faculty member who was trying to address issues of promotion based on what he thought was part of a contractual agreement.
So more traditional RPT case?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The second one was cause for dismissal. Actually, the first two were cause for dismissal.
Uh-huh.
Or dismissal with cause. And so I was willing to do it simply because Terry asked.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if it had been Bob,
mm-hmm.
I would have said yes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably say that the naivete on my part, but I still stay steadfast in that, is I refuse to read any of the previous histories of any grievance.
Okay.
My point was, I thought I was going to be here temporarily, and I didn't want to know the histories. I didn't want to know people's conflicts and how they were resolved.
Mm-hmm.
It was unimportant, because my thought was we're dealing with the current to the future and
mm-hmm.
deal
mm-hmm.
with that. Conversations with Bill, Sam, Maureen, all gave me a perspective on how to approach issues.
Mm-hmm.
There were some carryover from the spring and the summer that
mm-hmm.
Didn't allow me to ramp up. I got thrown into the pool,
mm-hmm.
say it that way. And I think we had...
So pending cases.
Yeah. Yeah. One of them was real complicated, and
mm-hmm.
I think in many respects the ability to speak with Terry, Cara, Melanie, Maureen, Bill, Sam, that all helped me gain a level of confidence and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to resolve some of those challenging situations very quickly.
Okay.
And in a way that people were satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So that began to intrigue me a little bit. As you well know, the fall semester brings a nice little traffic flow. And so, again, that was a very quick learning experience, but it began to intrigue me more and more to think about the way people were approaching me, the way that I was trying to address their concerns and their issues and their resolutions, and it just became more and more interesting, so that's what motivated me to eventually apply for it. I think part of my own experience in another life outside of the university, I was a soccer official.
Okay.
And so that's just one of those strange things where you, for me, where I learned to look at what policies or rules of competition were and how we make accommodations for people, but then also understanding at this institution how there has to be a level of adherence to it.
No,
so it was just the
I have a grandson who is a soccer superstar.
Yeah.
So, so no, I mean seriously, a superstar.
Really? Who did he play for?
Well, he did East Lansing High School, 10th and 11th grade. Hopefully he'll do this fall, but now he's on a travel team called the Jaguars out of Wixom, and this weekend he's in Las Vegas.
So he's playing for the National League?
I guess.
Yeah.
They did Carolina a couple of weeks ago,
they
whatever.
Did that just before Christmas.
But yeah, but,
and then they
but right now
in
they're
January.
In Vegas this weekend, so he's quite good.
Yeah, they did Florida in January. So yeah, I mean, I still do some work with them and consult.
So it's so I know a little bit about it, anyways.
But it's just
it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole different life phase.
Yeah, and if you did athletic council, you got a little that NCAA Big Ten level too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I did some matches at University of Michigan. I mean, I got all the way up to doing college matches.
Okay. So you must have played when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I think all of that were things that helped me feel a level of comfort with the position and with the growth. I think, as I mentioned to you and Bob, the one thing that I've seen are more faculty coming and seeking guidance on dealing with interpersonal conflict with peers, not necessarily administrators, but the microaggressions and the bullying that's going on. And they're looking for some type of guidance and assistance in this office.
Which is, you may or may not know, banks help create this mediation services under Bruce Miller. And two dozen people, including myself, were trained as mediators. But it didn't get used much for various reasons. And I think when we talked, you, I, and Bob, he told you some of the reasons why.
Yeah.
And then they were thinking what else could be done with it. And so this office started to pursue a discussion about, and the point was that it would be things that weren't relevant or appropriate for what was the definition then of the FGP, which was faculty complaints about administrators. But this could be faculty, clerical, whatever. But all the unions basically said no thanks, as Bob explained. They had their own grievance procedure and they didn't really want to go out otherwise. And unfortunately, it, in my opinion, since this is a field I know something about, it was a little too complicated. I thought it was two mediators, lots of rules about how to present things and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And so it just, it never took off. And then, but there was discussion about would this be a possible place to do that, and I guess Bill pursued that.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
So I think that's an interesting point that you raised, because one of my requests to Terry is when we got into formal negotiations for the permanent position, one of the requests that I had was if his office would support a mediation training for me. And it was not because I felt uncomfortable doing what I was doing, but I wanted a check and balance to make sure that it was more procedurally correct.
Well, it makes sense. We had 40 hours training. There's 24 of us that were being trained to be mediators in this mediation services under Bruce Miller. And some of it was less. Anyway, so somebody who, that's his field, or part of his field, it wasn't. But it was very helpful. And then we had role plays. We practiced some cases. We got graded. It was a fun 40 hours. I think sure. That's what it was, 40 hours. Anyways, so I absolutely think it's a great idea you're doing that. What you looking at now, are you?
So I'm looking at question 4.
Okay.
The most positive and most unpopular challenging aspects.
So you started as responsible administrator.
Right.
In June?
August,
okay. Of 18.
Yeah.
Okay. And you became the FGO.
I was appointed as acting on October 19th.
Okay.
And appointed on February, whatever, the February board meeting.
Right, 2019, okay. And so one of the questions when Bob and I interviewed June yesterday, I think, Terry a week ago or so, was, is there any difference between responsible administrator and FGO? You have a comment about that?
I guess my response would be, the way that I understood it was that the responsible administrator was a way to have a placeholder person here who didn't have the title, since it's a Board of Trustee appointed position.
My understanding is the same. I think both of them said it didn't originate here. It originated in some other issue someplace else. This allowed the administration to choose somebody who would really do the job, but for short term, and didn't need Board of Trustee approval. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that they were less competent or anything about them. It was just, this lets us do it immediately. We got a hole, we need to fill it. June seemed to say, no, as far as jobs, in terms of doing the work, there was no difference to her.
No, but the connection between these two questions, between your question 3 and 4, mm-hmm. in most transitions,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's even appropriate to say that way.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge that I experienced in the transition was that both Bell and Donahue had removed themselves from any interaction. And so ramping up was one that I had to do by trial, error, learning, talking.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't you sharing with me your wisdom, your experiences,
uh-huh.
your goals, your aspirations.
They just disappeared?
They sort of did, yeah. And I don't mean it negatively.
Understood.
But that was just one of the things that I had to take a step back. And I would tell people who came in, you know, I'm going to take a day to think about this, and
mm-hmm.
I'm going to get back because I got to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my comments to June and Terry was, what is the succession plan for this unit?
Mm-hmm.
Because what we know about life in general is any one of us can keel over today
mm-hmm.
or get hit by a bus. So what are the plans for making sure that
mm-hmm.
the integrity of this unit stays
mm-hmm.
and that there's a transition plan always?
Mm-hmm.
And that's created some interesting discussion because it's a critical position that
mm-hmm.
people want and desire.
And I assume some of that was also with UCFA.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So did UCFA have any problems with this? Well, Bell, John Bell, who I've never met, I don't know if it makes sense to interview him or not, he also had this title, but just for 2 months, 3 months?
Correct.
Okay. And that was mostly the summer. So to what extent did UCFA sort of get involved, concerned, raise issues in terms of this transition from a more traditional FGO appointee to a responsible administrator to something we don't know quite where we're going? So
I guess I would say to you, I don't know the full answer to that. I know that when I showed up at their first meeting,
mm-hmm.
there was a question of who are you and what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall if Terry was back or not because of his mother's death, but somebody introduced me as the responsible administrator, and there was a sort of, oh.
So in my time, there was a lot more stability. Banks was the person before Terry for first year or two of my time, and then it was Terry, whatever the number of years. But throughout all of that was this woman, Donna Zischke,
yep, yep,
who was, you know, the institutional memory
right.
of all this kind of academic HR stuff. And she would attend every meeting of the whole UCFA and all of the subcommittees for the personnel HR side. So it must have been very different, because then two ladies took over Donna's job, as I understood it. And I don't even know which of either of them attended those meetings. Or
they both attend some of them. Carr tends to be at more of the meetings than Melanie, but Melanie has attended some of the meetings as
okay.
well. So I see both of them. I want to say that first meeting, I thought Cara was there.
Doesn't matter, but just my guess is that Donna, having been there for decades, although she hardly say anything at the full meeting, but at the personal subcommittee, she'd talk more kind of thing. And sometimes she'd be there, not Terry or Bob kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think what happened here, and we have to remember Terry's mother passed, so
right.
he was gone for a couple of weeks, and
right.
that may have disrupted the communication flow.
Gotcha.
Mark Udell was very open and supportive. We met shortly thereafter to discuss the mm-hmm. tentative plans and the transition issues. And
okay.
so there, once he and Suzanne were fully informed, there was support. But I think it was just the timing of it.
So you just threw some names out. Were these the people that were the chairs or subcommittee chairs or what?
Mark is UCFA chair. Suzanne Crandall is the personal sub chair.
Thanks. Okay.
And she's from libraries.
Gotcha. Okay.
And again, I think
In the fall we just went through, 2018?
Yes, they're both still in the position. So I think mm-hmm. part of it was just the transition
right.
with Terry's life disruption.
Gotcha.
So I don't think that they were not supportive.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well, it certainly wasn't easy for you in terms of that.
It may have been more personally anxiety driven.
Uh-huh.
I don't think people questioned anything, but it was mm-hmm. just something that.
Well, they ask questions. They should.
Right. Right.
You had been there yourself. I don't know how long you did UCFA yourself, but you had been there.
Yeah, would have asked the same questions.
So. Six was, so I would not ask so much about the last 2 weeks, just sort of the whole time when it asked what activities do you spend most of your time on. The job, as I understand it now, is considered a half-time job. I don't know how that's divided up in terms of responsibilities you have to your home unit versus to the provost office. And then among the parts of the time that you're responsible to here. And I guess if you don't know, that isn't how it was for my tenure, nor the people before me. It became half-time when Linda Jackson became the FGO.
Yeah, I think part of my response is that the workload of a half-time seems to be appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I say seems to be because there, as you well know, the ebbs and the flows of people coming in and the inquiries.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the meetings that I've had with faculty grievance are here.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few that I've gone to them. There are a few unit issues that I've gone to mm-hmm. talk with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. I think it's probably a little bit more than 50% time that mm-hmm. I spend here, but I also have a unit where we have an interim chair, so a lot of things are falling on my plate. So that's why I say I forgot it for a few months.
So you're still teaching? Or
I still teach. I still have the administrative responsibilities.
How much do you teach?
One class a semester.
One every semester?
Yes.
Something you've taught for years, or?
The course this term is a new prep.
Oh.
But everything else has been, the other courses were stable.
So I don't know how much you know about the more recent history after me, but before you. Dr. Tehan was very disappointed that it became a halftime job and complained to June and Terry about that. Bill seemed not to mind, and part of the issue seemed to be, from my perspective, that Tehan was still an associate, not a full, and in English, you do one book to become tenured, another book to become full, and I assume Com is not that way, but it didn't matter. Bill was already a full and tenured and whatever. Sheila was tenured, but not full. And when she took the job, it was under one provost and then switched to a different provost, and Bill's was always the same. Sheila had, when she got a new chair, as I understood it, some issues about now they're kind of want to rediscuss what I teach. Bill was, as I understood it, and I interviewed him, but not recently, and maybe I should again, I'm teaching the same class I've taught for years. I give lectures. There's TAs, whatever, who grade and do the other stuff. And I love doing these lectures, so it's just fine.
Yeah, see,
so, I that's just a background, my perspective.
Yeah, the course I teach in the fall, I've been teaching since 2002. It's a youth policy course. So I change about a third of the course every year, just based on changes in federal law. And I do keep about a third of the section on juvenile justice policy, which is my field, so it's not a heavy lift, but there's always some
things to keep up on. Yeah.
And the other advantage that I have is that it's online.
Oh, I didn't know that. So, and you like that?
There's an advantage and a disadvantage. I would never encourage a junior faculty member to do an online course because you're on 7 days a week.
Right, but for more senior person, it's a good thing.
I'm not certain it's a good thing.
Okay.
I will be on. I will check online 5 to 7 times a day.
Wow.
You know, it might be half an hour, but it's. So you think of the contact, if this was a traditional course, you'd be in the classroom 3 hours a day. So I schedule myself for half hours multiple times per day.
So when I retired after 36 years, my own home unit had changed while I was here and was no longer very welcoming of me. Though now that person's leaving, so I have to think about, do I want to go ask him again? Anyways, so I went other places that I had contacts, and the offers to teach, which was what I assumed and I think I still believe, were what I missed most, were all to do online, including mostly summer online because of the finances of how the university structures this thing. And so I had always had an annual appointment. So I was looking forward to summers off instead of summers on. And I also just wasn't sure I felt like gearing up to do online. And I also wasn't sure that's the part of teaching I would miss. I assumed it was more the interaction with the young people. So, but I pursued it enough that I went and, you know, did some preparation, did some, you know, meeting with people who like to do online, whatever. And so I think I have some, and also, I don't know if you still do this, but when I was FGO, they used to call them multis. They changed the name. Anyways, there were two sets of training things out of the provost office in that area. One was for administrators to what's going on. Every year you'd have one provost, one president, then you'd have other key things. And then one for like making you a better faculty member. So I attended these things. I just thought it was useful to know what other faculty were up to and expected to do and stuff. So I wasn't like not knowing what this meant. But just in the end, so far, I've only been 5 years retired, have decided I don't think I want to do online. But I still think about it.
It raises a good question because the Academic Advancement Network is now what was the former multi. And part of me believes that at least for next year I need to schedule those in, not because it's more to create a presence, a face, and to understand what everybody else is going through. I mean, it's interesting because I've thought about that same question.
I thought it was very useful for me to be at Maltese, which used to be the administrator ones, which would be about 100 people. More would come for the provost or president, but they could be up to 100 and a quarter, and they could be 80 or whatever.
Yeah, and I
it was partly just being visible.
Right.
And administrators would want to talk to me about cases in the hallways going in or out, and I'd sort of say, we can't talk now, but a little bit on the side here, but it was very useful because I was showing that, you know, I wanted to work with them.
Okay.
And I think that was important, so I would support.
Well, I'm glad you have substantiated my thinking.
Yeah, so when I've, two things you've said, then I'm going to give you a little more, and I'm delaying us getting through these questions.
It's okay.
One was when people ask about the office workflow sort of thing, they would always think summer was an off time. And I would tell them, well, the way we do RPT around here, there's no time busier than April, May, and June. Things can drop back a little in July, mm-hmm. but May and June are not disappearing. That's when people get the final word that, you know, they didn't get whatever they wanted in RPT or salary or something mm-hmm. like that. And Christmas is not necessarily a dead time for various reasons. So that was kind of always interesting because people had a different perspective. But as I talked to Terry, as you may know, I did the job and then Linda Jackson was hired and it didn't work, and then I came back as interim for a while. But we kept me at halftime because that's how they had changed it. And I tried to keep track and give Terry a report on how many hours I thought it really was and all that kind of thing. But, and Dr. Banks and Professor Yvette both didn't think it was a good idea for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Not that it's really full-time, but just the old way was you do the job, you work for the provost office, you keep doing things in your home unit because you're going to go back there, and so that both you and professors and chairs and deans and directors all think of you as a professor. So you're like, you know, that's your job. And you know, you see yourself as someone who would do research, do teaching, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you did a little bit of it, but you weren't, I think, Bob Banks and I both kind of made the argument, but it didn't get held up, that was a sensible approach. But anyway, so they did otherwise. And as I said, Tehan didn't like it, but Bill was fine with it. And it'll be interesting to know in the future how it works.
So far, I'm fine with it.
Well, I think that's great. And I think part of the issue from the top administration is this is one of a number of similar positions. We might think of it as unique, and it's got unique parts, but there's somebody who's in charge of academic misconduct. There's somebody in charge of, institutional review boards. They're different things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a person who's the university ombudsperson.
Right.
And so all of these, and I'm probably thinking, forgetting some, probably faculty governance, have gone back and forth of whether they're full-time, half-time, or whatever. So I assume from if you were the provost or the president, you'd sort of say, well, what are we doing with other similar things, and how much work is it? So I found that always fascinating.
The one thing that I talked to Terry and June about, and again, it's just important for me to say this to you, is that there's always a perceived conflict of interest that I divulge whenever I see anybody from the College of Nursing. My sister's the dean of nursing at Pennsylvania.
Oh.
And she was an associate dean at the University of Michigan. And some of the faculty in the college were her mentees or colleagues.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I divulge that right up front. And
that's great.
I say to them, you have the right, I can find another person, but it's just, for me, that's kind of an interesting perspective.
No, absolutely. No, I think that's that's very good you did that. I didn't have many cases in my 8 years that were the what we used to call LIR, now it's mm-hmm. HRLR. But I certainly had a few that were College of Social Science. And so it was important to make sure that people, both the administrator and the faculty member, felt like you were being, you know, listening to both of them, and you didn't have biases and you weren't looking to do something that would benefit yourself rather than solving the problem. So I think that's good that you felt that way.
Quite honestly, it surprised me because there was a faculty member who shared with me that my sister was her dissertation advisor. And when I met the dean of the College of Nursing, who I had only seen a picture of, he looked at my name tag and he said, is your, and I said, yep.
Wow, that's cool. That's
so
fun.
I mean, it's why I always lead with that.
I think that you're very sensible. Another thing I would just say, I really have to be quiet. People perceive, well, different people who've had this job, and I'd have to look up, I brought the count, let's say it's 13. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, well, some are repeats, but anyways, if you added the whole number up and took off the repeats, it's in right. That dozen range. We've been the FGO. For the most part, and so Bob Banks and I have interviewed, going back to the beginning, almost every provost and president. I think we've got two we haven't done yet. Almost all of them have been basically, and we've tried to probe and say, don't just flatter us to say you like it too. I mean, and we got some negatives. Luanna had some criticisms. She'd like to see it more targeted to help trouble, and she didn't use this word, but I'll use it, troubled employees become better. Mm-hmm. So she'd like that connection stronger. Trying to think who, I think June and a couple others thought sometimes it just takes too long and these things just get too whatever. Anyway, so different ones, but they've all been basically positive that it's a sensible, if not perfect, and have some thoughts about what might be different or whatever, mm-hmm. but fairly modest kind of changes. And of course, the president doesn't get involved very much,
right.
So their involvement, probably the president of all who is the most involved was Peter McPherson. And so I don't know, I named them the frequent filers. We had two professors who, when I took over the job, were half of the workload, because they both just kept filing over and over and over cases. And so they were literally half of almost 50 cases. It took about 18 months to change that around and for them to be gone. But anyways, that drove Peter nuts and Mike Rubner nuts, because these two characters just made this not a fun job, or made it a less. And you may remember some of that, because one of them actually sent emails to every faculty, tenure system faculty member.
I remember that.
As well as state senators and board of trustees members and whatever. So, and Peter also had another case involving Africa. When he just took over, he told us about this case that was complicated. And he kind of got more involved than he otherwise would have, but because he knew the country in Africa. And of course, that was part of his interest and whatever, was international agriculture sort of stuff in Africa. So he'd gotten very involved in that. So anyways, it was kind of interesting to, I had a great time doing these interviews. It was really a lot of fun.
Well, the reason I was smiling a little bit is because I've already met a frequent filer.
Oh, really? You have one going now?
We have one going.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, I think it's sort of one of your questions, what are the things that I don't like?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's the faculty who come here, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful,
mm-hmm.
who come and say, I have a problem with Bob Banks, and oh, by the way, I have an OIE report, but I still want to do this. And so you've got this OIE investigation, which my response is, I don't want to know about that.
Right.
That's none of my business.
You can't deal with it. Right.
But they still want it, and this person, in their grievance, 6 of the 7 issues were OIE related.
Mm-hmm.
The 7th one wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
We sat over there and we had an informal agreement with the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the third chair that she had dealt with. We drafted everything, gave her 2 months to sign it. She kept saying, I can't do it because I have an active OIE investigation. We said, we have told you, OIE have told you that these are unrelated. We need to pursue with this. And she wouldn't sign off. So I finally wrote a memo and said, if you don't sign off, then we are going to terminate this. Haven't heard back from her, but I understand she's real pissed at me.
So I assume you have time limits still.
Yeah.
And you can give extensions, but then you tell people you can only have so much more extension, or where?
Well, partly because she wouldn't act on it. And so all of the informal resolutions were time dependent. And my point was, you have been told by multiple people,
right.
And she would come back with emails of saying, but I think,
mm-hmm.
we're all saying, based on jurisdictional decisions, these are not convoluted,
mm-hmm.
these are separate issues.
Gotcha.
She would not budge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the side issue, and this came up in a couple of our interviews with Provost and something, and I wonder if you've seen this already in your time. Besides a few people that keep coming in, when I took over the job, I had a few people who I thought treated this as a social work / psychiatric, not psychiatric, but a place just to vent. Mm-hmm. They didn't really expect or think that it could go anywhere in terms of grievance process, but they really wanted someone just to listen. That was fine, but the fifth time or something, you kind of go, you know. And so I had to kind of be rude after a while, a couple times, and sort of said, you know, maybe we've covered this already or something. I'd like to talk to you. I don't mind just talking to you over a meal just to be friends. But anyways, those were a couple. But the other thing that happened was, besides sort of some people that overused the FGP process, there were some departments that were troubled. And so this came up in a couple of these interviews that we talked, June and Bob and I talked about it the other day. I think Peter talked to us about it. It just, whether it's because of where they stand within sort of salaries across the whole university or particular things in terms of they haven't had an administrator who was as competent or as skilled to be an administrator or whatever the reason, there were some departments where you just kind of, you know, 12 faculty and you see half of them over a couple of years. Have you had that already, or?
There's, I would probably say of the 40 to 50 people that I've seen throughout since August, there's only mm-hmm. one unit where there's been more than one
Good.
Person.
Great.
And in that particular case, the chair came to me to ask about climate-based issues first
mm-hmm.
and touched on some of the issues that they were dealing with. Then the faculty member came and claimed that it was another person. Then another faculty member came and told me that it was that person who had come.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went back and met with the former chair and the new chair and said, based on my read of all of this, here are my observations. And one of the things that I said was, it seems that some of the issues that are being presented are because this person is a program director but is not following your governance model.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that a valid assumption?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we hadn't thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so my point was, maybe the way to address the
mm-hmm.
climate issue
mm-hmm.
is by holding that unit
mm-hmm.
accountable to their procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So they're focusing on that right now.
So we had a couple units where, because too much changeover and who was chair, whatever, an acting chair, or just not as competent a person running it, or just because within, like I was saying, sort of the pecking order, it was just a less funded, and therefore it's just not as much fun to be making $50,000 when you know other people are making $200,000
sure.
or whatever through networks and stuff. So we had some of that. Sometimes. And this would relate, well, two quick things. One was a couple times, like before Terry was the HR associate provost, he took on some jobs helping consult, and it may have been kind of in what you now are doing more formally as mediation, going into a unit that had just so much of this going on that the provost office just said sort of, can we help do some work with all of you or something like that. And someday you could ask Terry about that, because I know he got called into that a couple times.
Okay.
To try to do something. But it'd be interesting, but you haven't been here long enough to see that repetition, and maybe that repetition isn't a problem anymore. One of the things that came up with the interview with June, which was very helpful and I wasn't surprised, she thought that the university system for letting people know that they weren't on a trajectory of success, had improved. That in the past, there were too many times where the chair would tend to say, you're doing fine, you're doing fine, you're doing fine, and then, well, we don't think you should stay here. And she said they're trying to make sure that in the first one where you say, you're doing fine, but you really need to improve in these areas, and then you're doing okay, but you really have to work on these areas, that they're doing that better now, those reports from chairs. So to the extent that she's accurate in her perception of that, that should be helpful.
You know, it's interesting. Maybe I can make a statement by also asking a question.
Mm-hmm.
In there have been three faculty who have come back. In two situations, what I did is I gave the persons some ideas of how they could talk to their administrator mm-hmm. to resolve the issue. They came back and said, boy, that was a great recommendation.
Good.
All of this is taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
The third person, however, is one who says, well, I don't want to do that, I want you to do it. And my response is, I need your permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the response is, well, I don't want you talking to them unless I'm there. It's like, well, wait a minute, how am I supposed to help you solve this
uh-huh.
if you don't give me some... And so the question that I'm sort of asking is the one thing that I feel... How often did you respond back to agreement by saying, here's what I have found out? Because what I tend to do is to guide them, help them, but not do a follow-up saying, hey, just checking in to see how everything is going.
Well, I think it really varies. So when I try to explain to people the job, I don't know if the number is 16 or 17 colleges during my
right.
time. About half of those either were small enough or the dean just wanted to do it themselves,
mm-hmm.
himself or herself. The others often had an associate dean, some title, who was in charge of their HR things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So after doing it for a while and building up some trust among those, I would end up in conversations, whether in person or email, with those kind of folks. And quite frankly, something else I told people was, I probably got to know some administrators better than I ever got to know grievants. If a grievant came to this office and this office helped resolve something for them, they didn't want to go talk to me on the street and acknowledge that they knew me. I mean, or if this office didn't solve it for them, they didn't want it. So, whereas if an administrator felt like you were really trying to help them resolve things, and I also used to tell them, you can be perfect and you're still going to have some administrators. You can be perfect, whatever that means, and still you're going to have cases. You can make it worse on yourself by being not very nice or not whatever kind of thing. But you know, you're still going to have more things. So if you have some, you know, numerous interactions, you have different kind of relationships. And so some deans, like the current president of the university, would welcome me into his wonderful office, and we'd sit around and spend 15 minutes BSing about his latest trip to Asia and show me good things and whatever, whatever, and then we'd spend the last whatever sort of talking about what would it take to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have already told the faculty member in most cases, but I won't say every case, that I was going to talk to the dean about it. And they had to sign off on a decision. I couldn't make a decision for them, but I would let the dean know what I understood might solve this. So I felt, which part of the, I'm a little surprised that you guys subcontract mediations. That to me was the most fun part of the job. So I can't give you an easy thing. There were some chairs who didn't want to have anything to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were a few that just said, like, I don't need a third party involved. If I want to talk to the faculty member, I'll talk to him. Go away. But that was not the typical thing. The typical thing was, if you can help us resolve this. And in some ways, it was more so at the dean's level than at the department level, but it would be both.
Yeah, and I will say that the subcontracting of mediation is relatively infrequent. I've probably done more, no, I know I've done more mediation than she has. She's currently involved with two, but these were issues where it's a long historical impasse between the grievant and the administrator.
Okay. It just, that surprised me, and I didn't understand. I understood the value of saying everything doesn't have to be warfare.
Right.
Because that isn't what dispute resolution's about. But I was surprised that Bill wanted to subcontract cases out. I just didn't. I just was surprised. I didn't know. And I need to ask him again, what do you think, did it work? And do you think it should be continued?
I can say, based on the two cases that I know that the current person is working on, in one particular case, which has been going on for almost 2 years, she's at least got them sitting down at the table and talking. And because she's capitated in terms of the hours and the monies that can be spent, they're actually going to continue some mediated sessions, but I'm going to sit in there and be their facilitator.
Okay.
So it's this interesting relationship that we're now beginning to evolve.
Well, so this isn't just criticism here. As I said earlier, this mediation services, I think, when Bob Banks got involved, and somewhat the model was Iowa. Iowa, at least years ago, used to have an ombudsperson who didn't just do, like us, student-faculty disputes, but did any dispute. And so I think that was one of the things that sort of did a genesis, helped lead to MSU saying, well, maybe if we create a mediation service that could do any kind of dispute, would it be useful? And then they gave it to this former FGO, Bruce Miller, to coordinate. As I said, I thought it was useful in some ways, but it never really took off. And it was a little too complicated, I thought, in terms of the structure of how it went. But the idea, because, so when I had a dispute where it's one professor complaining about another, I guess I would usually say to him, well, you can't use this office to solve that, but you could grieve or talk to the chair about whether or not they're not taking care of a problem. And so, you know, I'd get involved sometimes with that. And so I would meet with the chair and the faculty member. I don't know. It just, it intrigues me in terms of how to think about that going forward.
I wonder, and maybe I'm beginning to talk like an older person at this institution. I look at some of the current faculty that are coming in, and I have to wonder if we are on-ramping them and socializing them into the academic processes the way we think. What I'm seeing with the younger faculty right now is, but this is not what I want. And so they don't look at the forest, they look at the tree limb. They only look at what's healthy for them. There are junior faculty who say, well, I don't care if the bylaws say that I have to be involved in governance. I don't want it. I don't get anything for it. Why should I do it? And some chairs are basically saying, oh, you're on a great trajectory. Let's put you on your research and teaching so you can continue that excellence. And it creates some internal. So who's at fault? I mean, in some respects, both are at fault. But junior faculty have this expectation of, if it's not for me, then I don't want to do it.
So we've talked as a historic land-grant college, university, about research, teaching, and service. But for at least the last couple decades, you don't get much credit for service.
Correct.
A few units, but some units, it's like teaching doesn't even matter. Some it isn't even, I mean, I had some senior faculty, senior not like being old folk like me, but people who've been around for a while who had very successful careers, and they would come to complain, and they weren't going to file a grievance, but they just wanted to vent, and I didn't mind, that was fine, to say, they used to care about my getting published in this A-plus journal or B-plus journal or whatever, or making a contribution that was seen internationally as of importance in my field. I'm not sure now they care about even that.
Right.
It's all about what's the overhead and what kind of grant can I bring in. And, you know, they would just kind of say, they would lament that kind of change. So there are definitely stresses in terms of how universities have changed in America, if not the whole world. So if you're a young faculty member with less security about these things and not knowing how this is going to play out for you and realizing that nobody cares about if you do service, well, it's not surprising if they tell you, I'm not going to put time into that.
Well, I think the other interesting thing...
And I think it varies all across the campus and depends on the chair and the dean and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, many deans now, as I said, I got to know some, would tell you X percent of their time, a third, a half of their time is based on the money they bring in terms of
right.
going to alum or going to whatever sources bring in money. And a little bit that's based on the quality of the research that the unit does, but not so much on teaching. And who's going to know anything about service?
Mm-hmm.
So it changes those priorities, I think. So I don't know. You have a challenge, but I think it's fun. I mean, I think it's interesting. So you want to schedule another time to keep going, or do you want to?
Whatever you want.
Well, I don't know what time it is. I didn't pay attention.
It's 12 o'clock.
Okay. I mean, I have no problem. We could stop here.
Okay.
If that's okay. I noticed you looked at the phone.
Oh, no, I just picked it up to see.
That's okay. That would allow Bob to... Is that okay with you?
That's fine with me.
Okay. So I think... Well, we certainly got through five. Although I think we covered a lot of other things,
yeah.
too. So do you want me to talk with Maureen to schedule? And
yeah,
Bob?
That'd be great.
Is that okay with you?
Not a problem.
Is this help you enjoying this enough to...
Yeah, not a problem. Happy to do it.
Keep that one. Keep
okay.
That. So do you have other things you wanted to ask me about or things related to...
Not at the moment.
So I understand that the provost office, June told us a little, but it sounded like it's still a work in progress, has decided to hire a former colleague of mine,
yes.
Michelle Kaminsky,
yes.
to be some kind of, I don't know what, assistant, associate,
I haven't figured it out.
A part-timer, whatever.
Yeah.
And it sounded, it came up in interviews with both Terry and Dean about how much time it would actually be and how you two would divide work, you two plus Sam is... Fifth time?
About 20 hours a week.
Okay. Well, that's half time.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Maureen's full time.
Right.
And so do they have different jobs? And I mean, or is that also going to change when you add Michelle to this mix?
I think the biggest thing with Michelle that she and I are talking about and we're thinking about is this whole issue of unit climate, civility, and dispute resolution.
Say that again?
Unit, what's the word I want to use?
You want me to turn the tape off?
It doesn't matter. It's really looking at interpersonal disputes between faculty.
Oh, okay. So focus on that part.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I think most of our efforts are based on the grievance side.
Right.
And we have this dispute resolution, but we don't really know what it means to ramp that up and how to serve
mm-hmm.
the institution.
So... Put another historic perspective to this. Is some of that because of what happened at this university with Strempel and whatchamacallit?
Nasser.
Nasser, in terms of that, the Me Too movement, male-female relations, or is it more kind of not all that different than it's always been, or do you have a sense of that?
I don't know how much those issues played into this, but I would say that part of the interpersonal conflict is growing more and more.
Mm-hmm.
There are basically units where I know faculty don't even talk to each other, and administrators have had to separate people by floors, which to me is the wrong issue because you never address the climate that you've got.
Are they gender-based, racial-based, age-based, or all the above?
All of the above.
Okay. Because certainly, so one I hinted at without saying anything very specific, that I mentioned that Terry got called into, and he worked on it, and then It came back during my FGO time. It was an older white senior faculty member who just did things that made non-white, non-male faculty and younger think that he just, and it's probably true, he just didn't think much of him. And, you know, he just did stuff. He wasn't the administrator, that's the whole point. He was just a senior faculty member, but he had been in that unit forever, and he made, from their perspective, life miserable. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they ended up grieving the chair in terms of you're letting this go on, and, you know, wasn't that the chair did this, but anyways, in the end, the university did move him to other location and or whatever, got him out of their life, understood that, you know, he was doing some things inappropriate, but I don't think he got disciplined. I don't remember that part of the story. So anyways, I must have spent several meetings with both of those faculty members, either separately or together, and several meetings with the chair talking about what could be done. And then there must have been other meetings with the provost office. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from my perspective, it was fascinating. This function, this FGP function, couldn't exactly solve it. Right. But it was helpful to listen. So.
Baby steps.
Huh?
Baby steps.
I guess. So it sounds like you're having fun.
Absolutely.
Well, that's neat. Thank you for the time.
Oh, no problem.